The number you have reached is not in service. This is a recording. 1 1 1 1 1.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse, but if they could, they would. Oh, Billy Bomb for the best, expect the worst. I hope that's understood.
And a very good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you on this, Wednesday evening, joined tonight by Kyle.
Hello.
Out in Signal Land, we have Rob T. Firefly.
Good evening.
We have Gila.
Hi there.
We have Alex.
Good morning. You do.
And I don't think any of us are in good shape right now. That's one of the reasons, excuse me, I've come down with something. I might have gotten it from Kyle, but I think I gave it to Kyle. So it's been going back and forth between us. I'm not sure how you two are, Rob and Gila. You look okay. Alex, you're in Greece. And the fact that you're in Greece, I don't mean that to sound like that's, a negative thing. It's a positive thing, but it makes it very difficult for you to do the later show that follows us. Overtime on YouTube. So we're not going to have an overtime tonight because some of us are feeling awful and some of us are far away. Fingers crossed for next week.
Yes, we may look okay, but trust me, we wouldn't sound as okay if we weren't muting the mic every time one of us had an extreme cough from this respiratory thing that we're dealing with in our household.
Yes, exactly.
Oh my God, what's going on? Everybody I know is sick. And it's not just people who are in town for the conference. It's people in different parts of the world. Is this how they're finally going to get rid of us? So they're just spreading some kind of disease around? Ooh, this is okay. Well, hopefully we'll make it through the hour or whatever time we have left. So it's good to see you all.
Likewise.
Oh yeah, likewise. Yep, absolutely. And it's 2 a.m. by the way over here, so I'm +7 in Naxos, Greece, which is an island sort of right in the middle of the Mediterranean. In the middle of Greece and Turkey, and it's quite late, it's quite dark, and you guys, obviously nobody on the radio can see me, but the reason why it looks pitch black on the screen here is because I'm at the top of this mountainous area, and I had the lights on outside here on the porch, but it seems like they automatically go off at 2 a.m., and I cannot for the life of me figure out how to put them back on, so I'm using my cell phone light to illuminate my face here, which is why I look especially scary to all of you tonight.
Well, wait a minute.
And here we go. And I just lost.
You just disappeared completely. Okay. So what? Your phone, does that have a timeout as well?
I wouldn't be surprised.
Wow. Okay.
Wouldn't be surprised.
So you're saying that literally as the show began, your lights went out and you can't figure out how to put them back on.
I have no idea how to put them back on. I even woke my wife up Okay, said, well, do you know how to put these lights on? She said, no, I'm back to sleep.
This is a hacker show, so we should be able to, in the hour ahead, figure out how to get Alex to turn the lights on in Greece. Have you tried standing up and waving your arms and that kind
of thing? I have tried that. I've been moving around nonstop looking for the damn switch.
Uh-huh.
Just have no idea.
Have you tried the stealing fire from Mount Olympus? I hear that's worked in Greece before.
Yes, that's true. That would be a ways away from me. But that's a great idea.
Maybe making some noise, clapping your hands, shouting really loud. I mean, yeah, it's going to annoy everybody, but
that'd be great.
You might get some illumination out of it.
We'll see. We'll figure it out.
Okay. Well, if anyone has any ideas, please. I don't know. There's nothing we're watching.
Email us.
Yeah, we're not going to check that during the show, though. And
no.
Yeah.
No.
Hey, we did get a lot of letters from last week with the call-in show. It was more than I can recall getting before. We're going to read a few of them here. Dear Off the Hook, the final caller on August 26th lamented how USB connection cables all seem to fail too soon. I agree. The high-quality brands are seldom any better than the cheaper ones, and almost all of them are made in China anyway. To reduce the chance of such failures, most of us already know not to pull on the wire when disconnecting the cable from a device and to instead grasp the plug itself when pulling it out. But also, there is actually a way to grasp the plug that is better than how most of us do that. Simply place your thumb along one of the narrow sides of the connector and your second or third finger on the opposite side, then pull the connector out that way. By not squeezing together the top and bottom surfaces of the plug, you avoid putting pressure on the areas inside of it where the delicate contacts are located. One other tip, some USB connectors, especially Apple's exposed lightning type, will appear to not work when all that was wrong was that the external contact surfaces needed to be cleaned. A little rubbing alcohol might make a bad cable work like new again. Signed, Kevin. Kevin, thank you for that helpful advice, which hopefully will save some grief for some of our listeners and maybe us.
This is a good plan.
So let me just make sure I understand. So when I'm removing the charger from my phone, I'm supposed to do it sideways and not smushy.
Something like that. Yeah. Grasp the plug. With your second or third finger on the opposite side, your thumb along the narrow side of the connector, pull the connector out that way. Don't squeeze together the top and bottom surfaces of the plug.
I'd never thought about that.
All right. Well, now we have something to think about. Here's another letter. Good evening, Off the Hook. Regarding the issue brought up by the caller that initially talked about the early internet as utopia, the Electronic Frontier Foundation has posted articles on their website about a portion of the internet whose purpose is to benefit the public rather than make a profit. They call it the public interest internet, and you can read more about that at eff.org/issues/public-interest-internet. They say there remains a wider, more diverse, and more generous world on today's internet, and they give links to relevant articles. In particular, the articles they link to with earlier dates found in higher numbered groups of linked to articles discuss specific websites that were made to provide resources to benefit the public. Imagine that, helping people, doing good things, and not just making a buck. So thank you for that letter. And the final letter I have here is, hey, long-time listener, first-time communicator. I'm listening to yesterday's show via podcast and want to throw my appreciation to the caller regarding the X10 standard. This dude is a wealth of information and sent me down a rabbit hole for personal projects. Thanks for the great program. Keep up the great work. And yes, that was quite a call, and we're still talking about it today. So thank you. And if you have any further comments or things you'd like to say to us, oth@2600.com is our email address.
Absolutely. And for those who may have missed last week's show, the X10 standard is worth looking into. It's transmitting control signals for automated things around your house over the plain old power lines. And it's a really fascinating rabbit hole, as our writer went to go down. And it's very old tech. It's like 50 years old now and really and still useful for a lot of people. So, look it up.
Okay, we have some local news regarding technology, schools in particular. Mayor Mondani and other city officials announced a sweeping new policy today, imposing a one-year ban on student use of generative artificial intelligence in New York City public schools from 2K, through 8th grade, while limiting screen time for younger students and launching AI literacy lessons for high schoolers. The moratorium takes effect during the 2026-27 school year. It'll affect nearly 600,000 students, roughly two-thirds of the city's public school enrollment. So this moratorium is a commitment to getting the future right, says Mondani. We will embrace new technology, but only when it serves our students. City officials said student-facing AI tools and companion chatbots will be prohibited for younger grades, while a coalition of educators, parents, experts, and elected officials studies the technology's impact and recommends next steps. A limited number of high school classrooms will be allowed to participate in closely monitored AI pilot programs, and all high school students will receive twice-yearly lessons focused on AI literacy, bias, ethics, and critical thinking. Officials said teachers will still be permitted to use AI for lesson planning and administrative work that meets city safety standards. The policy also introduces new screen time guidelines, including restrictions on one-to-one device use for the youngest students and recommended daily caps of 30 minutes for grades 3 to 5, 45 minutes for grades 6 to 8. Mondani called the move necessary to protect human connection in classrooms, arguing children should develop problem-solving and social skills alongside teachers and peers rather than relying on AI tools. School leaders have been awaiting the guidance for months. Principals were instructed in July to pause software purchases while the administration finalized its policy. Early guidance released in March did not include grade-based AI restrictions or limits on digital devices. The crackdown comes amid growing concerns from parents, educators, and lawmakers about the impact of artificial intelligence and screen-based learning on children. Parent advocacy groups have pushed for an AI moratorium in schools, while more than half of the city council signed a letter urging City Hall and the Department of Education to halt expanded AI use in classrooms. Thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's interesting stuff. And Alex, I want you to get in on this before me, because among us, you're the ones with kids in school in the city, so...
Okay, Alex could have just spoken on his own, but go ahead.
Yeah, I could. Well, you know, I had to reposition my camera so you could see me, so I wanted to chime in on this. I mean, I think this is mostly good. I can completely understand this. And also, I think that the use of AI in classrooms is a particularly tricky issue as well, because there's a difference between schools purchasing AI-focused or based technologies that they're using as teaching aids. And then there's the separate issue of the home use of AI for kids using large language models, ChatGPT, Perplexity, et cetera, to do their homework for them. Because banning school use here is certainly not going to prevent any kind of home use here. So I don't think that the policy can realistically have anything to do or with students actually being prevented from using ChatGPT or any kind of similar tool for home use. I mean, kids are still going to be using these AI systems to do their homework, to do their learning, to write their essays, write their papers, their draft reports, et cetera. And the gap between detection of the use of AI, especially when it comes to writing, and the non-use of AI and false positives when trying to detect the use of AI is really becoming almost untenable here. There was just an article a few days ago that I was reading here in Greece in the Financial Times weekend section. Basically, the thesis of it was that it's very, very difficult to detect AI-focused writing right now. And there are many, many more false positives, even though people are making great strides in this. So I think banning AI in schools runs the risk of creating a gap between students who know and use AI responsibly. And I know there's going to be some kind of training about this. I don't really trust New York City public schools to get the training exactly right when it comes to the ethics, use, bias, discrimination, et cetera, of these very complicated systems, having a child in two children, actually, in the throes of the Department of Education in New York City schools doesn't give me a great deal of confidence in their competence, number one. But I think that, you know, there could be, you know, this gap between kids who understand how to use AI responsibly for the use of any kind of work. And maybe we're putting blinders on our eyes and pretending that this is going to affect students and prohibit them from using AI at home. So my fear, though, is that kids are still going to do this. They're just going to do it more poorly than they were doing it before, more surreptitiously than they were doing it before.
Yeah, I don't think they really believe that kids aren't going to be using it at home. It's mostly the parents that have pushed for this legislation in the first place, or this ruling in the first place. So what happens at home, that's up to the parents, obviously. But an environment in school where people aren't just using, students aren't just using artificial intelligence for their learning, you know, I think that's a good step where, you know, you have actual human interaction between students and teachers, like, you know, the old days. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, the angle on this I'm really interested in is the fact that this decision was able to be made at all in this era where we're still in the throes of the AI hype bubble, and all the companies that make these things are selling them so hard to schools and other public institutions and private institutions all over the world. And the fact that the school district was, or the school system here, was able to sort of back off from the hype machine for a second and say, okay, let's question this. Let's question our dependency on this. Let's question the place of this in the system, instead of just doing what I think is very tempting to do, especially in the public sector, which is, okay, you're saying this thing is going to do a great thing for me, so let's just you know, get a contract together and throw it at the kids and let the fallout happen. And as someone whose personal experience in the public school system was extremely flawed, I am always happy to see educators actually like taking a more critical eye toward things like this and focusing more toward actually interacting with the kids and maybe educating them. The idea that they're going to be teaching anything at all about the ethics and bias and so on in AI use for the high school students is very interesting to me as well, because I think we're still very lacking in the area of media literacy education. And this is a step in the right direction for that.
It is, but twice yearly lessons,
mm-hmm.
that, because I think the saturation of so many of these tools and products just grows by leaps and bounds every day. How on earth are they going to plan two lessons for a year? And how is that going to, you know, I fail to understand how that is going to achieve literally anything.
Mm-hmm.
I applaud the early childhood and the elementary and middle school pieces. I'm a little concerned that there had to be, it had to be said that they don't want kids in 2K using generative AI. That did make me a little nervous. But the twice yearly lessons part does raise a hackle or two.
Yeah.
But I also understand that, you know, obviously things are in flux and in motion as they have to be.
And it's a baby step and school is starting in like a week. So
also true.
Oh, that's right. School hasn't started yet in the city, has it?
No, it has not.
Oh, it's been going since August in many places, but
it's been going since July in some places.
I don't know what's going on. Kyle, go ahead.
I would just add that it is not going to be one and done. So my only suggestion is that it's something that's ongoing, sort of a living policy that can change and evolve with some of the standards and understanding and changes that the technology itself will experience and make evident to all of us. I don't think you can sort of expect to have it codified and be perfect. So my only thing is that I hope it continues to be something that can be changed and adapt and remain current and not become something that's out of date immediately. So mm-hmm. Yeah, as long as they have something down and then they can learn, have lessons learned with feedback and stuff, and then come back in the next school year with something even better and more robust and that really reflects the state of the art.
Go ahead, Alex.
I could see a scenario where teachers actually push back against this policy, because I think that the teachers, and especially the teachers' unions, might feel like they have now the burden shifted over to them to determine what's an approved tool and what's an unapproved tool for their use in the classroom. And then this cutoff at eighth grade seems to be a particularly blunt cutoff as well. You know, I do have a child in middle school, and it's, you know, it seems kind of weird to just have this eighth grade cutoff. But I think that the teachers really do have a case here, because they are the ones who have to figure out what's approved, what's not approved, and without any kind of clear account of how the system or how the city is going to ensure that these rules are promulgated properly, that they're given the correct guidance, that, you know, they know what they can and cannot use when it comes to grading with respect to AI systems, with respect to the generation of lesson plans, et cetera. I think that that's going to be a very tricky issue. I could see the teachers union really pushing back on that. And I could also see the Department of Education weaponizing this policy against teachers in ways that they may not particularly like. I mean, if you compare this to what's going on right now in South Korea, there's a huge, huge stark contrast, I think, between the South Korean approach with respect to AI and the approach that we're seeing in the United States, and particularly in New York City public schools. Have you been following any of that?
I have no idea what you mean. Go ahead.
Because South Korea basically just announced that all of their citizens are getting unlimited tokens for the use of AI systems for certain purposes, you know, using agentic AI systems to help them with respect to civic responsibilities, et cetera. And their position is essentially that AI and a citizen's right to AI and use it is and use AI is basically a universal public infrastructure. And it's subsidizing access for all citizens in South Korea for access to AI systems and giving them, you know, throughout the entire country, AI literacy lessons about education, strong domestic AI ecosystem support, and not any kind of moratorium or age-based classification system that puts the brakes on this. Rather, they're hitting the gas pedal as fast and as hard as they can when it comes to the use of AI across the entire country. So if we compare what we're doing in the United States with respect to AI and what other countries are doing with respect to AI, we may be creating a knowledge gap and a skills gap that becomes untenable and unworkable in the future. I'm not sure if that's the case. I'm just presenting the other argument. I actually don't really think that will be the case. I think what we're doing in the United States and pushing back against data centers and having these moratoriums on the use of AI in classrooms are good, because we want people to be people and humans to be humans. And I think that, and this is very consistent with the position I've taken on this show for the last decade or so, but I think that the best bulwark against any kind of nonsense, any kind of specious political activity is the gray matter within our own brains. And we can't rely on any kind of large language models or AI systems to detect fallacious reasoning, to detect any kind of fraud in the political sphere, all these types of things that are civic responsibilities and duties of any human being, we have to do ourselves. I think we need to continue to have that approach to how we educate human beings. But I do think there is some, I think, reason to reconsider our positions in light of what the rest of the world is doing.
Well, first of all, the rest of the world is just South Korea, according to what you've said. And I haven't heard any questioning as to the risks that they're embarking upon by allowing this unfettered access. The thing with access to AI, it's different than using AI. AI is subjective. There can be very beneficial AI, and there can be AI that is used to subvert the way you think and to believe things that are not true. We've seen all the horror stories. So, you know, they're opening up a Pandora's box. But are they really talking about giving this unlimited access to second graders? Because that's what we're talking about here in New York, between second grade and eighth grade. That is what we're talking about. and whether or not it's a good idea for kids to use AI as if it is an essential learning tool. And honestly, I don't believe it is. I think it's a tremendous help if you know what you're saying, if you know what you're asking for. And these are things that you learn over time. I'm in favor of AI. I use it a lot, but I don't use it as a crutch. I don't use it as a substitute. I use it as an enhancement. I don't think second graders are capable of that yet. And I think it's important for them to develop a relationship with their teachers and their textbooks and to learn how to learn before they start using tools like this. You know, we feel the same way about other enhanced tools that, you know, more grown-up children have some skill at. So I think it's important that we, define our terms here and look at what is actually being said and advocated for. Kyle, did you have something? Go ahead.
Oh, I would just point out that the incentive is towards less information in this country. And I would cite the policies around broadband specifically. I think it was this week or the last couple weeks that the FCC rescinded their gigabit speed goals, or that was from a previous administration.
What's up with that?
Because it unfairly marginalizes slower products. And I think that trend overall, it is all about A, keeping the populace as idiotic and stupid as possible, and B, making as much money splitting up and dividing broadband into tinier and tinier and tinier slices. And the only time you ever see Congress pass anything is for bumpkins out in rural God knows where. They never want to do anything for broadband in the city or in populous areas, because those are already captive to the cable providers and entrenched telecommunications business plans that just want to keep charging people God knows what for, like, crappy DSL. So and don't even get me started on why we don't want an educated populace. But I think that as laudable as that might be, or an aspirational thing for our country, or we might have a sort of historical mythology around education as a priority, the de facto situation is that's not in the interest of business and our form of prosperity here, straight up. Like, why would you want intelligent voters? Not in this country.
Well, they're definitely trying to eliminate
those. But you can, they can, you part them with their money easier. You make them vote against their interests easier. It's all well documented. So anyway, that's my point with that. That, yeah, sure, it might be a sweet direction for another country, but that ain't this country, people.
Go ahead, Alex, and then we'll move on.
Yeah, well, I think we could honestly spend hours on this particular issue. And I don't really think anybody, including us, fully understands the import of any of these policies that are being made. But I think Kyle's totally right to compare this to something like a public good, right? Like a broadband or public education. Because that's how South Korea seems to be looking at the use of AI. Whereas in the United States, and in New York City in particular, we are essentially asking the question whether our children are ready for AI. Are we ready for this? Can our kids handle the use of AI systems? Can our teachers use and regulate the use of AI systems? Whereas on the other hand, South Korea approaching AI as if it is some kind of public good like broadband is asking a different question. They're asking whether their country, in their country rather, can anybody afford to be left without AI access? So it really is an access issue here. And the policies in New York could unintentionally be creating more of a digital divide. You know, we have the access problem in New York City as well, still between people who have access to the internet and people who don't have access to the internet, people who rely on Link NYC kiosks to have access to the internet and do their homework and many places. Well, Alex, is a real thing.
Can I just ask you, what could the policies in South Korea unintentionally result in?
Oh, I think they could unintentionally result in a lot of things. I mean, it goes back again, I think, to what Kyle was talking about, what you're talking about. if we over rely on AI systems to do everything for us, we essentially dumb ourselves down. We become meat puppets for large language models that they themselves, you know, have their own bias, their own racism, their own tendencies, mm-hmm. their own fallacies inherent to them. I think it can be incredibly dangerous to over rely on AI systems. In fact, I mean, I see it all the time. In my law practice, I feel most of the time these days that responses I get from counterparties are all generated by large language models, at least in the first instance. People are over-relying on these systems. It's so obvious. And nobody is having any kind of original thoughts anymore. And I think that we're all dulling our intellectual instincts down. I think that we also have to think about who benefits in these systems. I'm not criticizing this policy in New York City simply because I'm not a big fan of this mayor. I think it, frankly, is probably a good policy overall, but it's something that I think none of us, including the mayor himself, have any idea about the long-term implications of this. I think this is a changing system,
well, in fairness,
and changing technologies.
Nobody knows the long-term implications because this has never happened before.
Well, exactly. But what we do know is, and we have to think about, is who benefits from this. And this is why I think the moratorium is probably a good thing overall, because the business model of these AI platforms these days is very different from the business models that have been dangerous to society in the past. They are not the model of surveillance capitalism, whereby our data is collected and then monetized and then sold to advertisers. The model for AI businesses these days is a reliance model. It's almost like an analogy you can make to a drug dealer, where the first couple of hits are free and then you have to pay for the rest of them. They want us to over-rely on AI systems to do everything. They want artificial intelligence to be part of everything we do, to consult them when we're changing a light bulb, to consult them when we're mowing the lawn, to consult AI systems when we're doing our taxes, et cetera, so that we rely on them like we rely on electricity, and we pay them over time like we pay the electric company. That's the business model, is to get us hooked. And I think the South Korea model benefits those platforms directly by giving access to an entire country to get hooked on this without having the proper educational support in place.
I would just add that you absolutely, I have the same concerns that basically they could, all your conversations could get immediate, do not fool yourself for a second that all your conversations could be completely locked away as they rebrand or reskin whatever tool you're using as something that you must subscribe to, and all of a sudden you don't have any of that. If it's not offline already and you're using something that is essentially in the cloud, you're already at their mercy. They just haven't pulled the rug out from under you. The other thing I want to point is a fantastic example of the kind of atrophy that you're talking about is mapping and GPS. Fantastic, phenomenal tool, but over-reliance on it has made people unaware of what street they're on or where they are or how to get somewhere without it. And I think that's a terrible side effect of what is a fantastic tool for traffic updates or navigating in unfamiliar areas or making car travel more efficient for business and other things. But people not knowing how to get places without it is a terrible, terrible side effect that I think most people might not realize has happened to them.
I can't find Lake Ontario to save my life. I don't know what's wrong with me. Rob, did you have something, Rob?
You had touched upon it during that conversation, which is that this is the first time a policy like this is being tried in this country. So, we don't know for sure how it's going to shake out, but it's definitely going to be interesting to keep an eye on and see how this goes.
Right, Alex, I'm going to give you the final word on this because we have a couple other stories.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think what our listeners should take away from this, in my opinion, is that, you know, there are a lot of so-called experts about AI out there that they claim to know the harms and effects of these particular systems, but we have to always keep in mind that this technology is so new, so changing, so evolving, and so innovative in some ways, and also so helpful to society, that nobody is really an expert in any of this. Nobody knows the long-term implications of it. There are no graybeards at all when it comes to AI. It's not like cybersecurity, where people have been practicing in this field for 30 years and quite literally do have long gray beards when you're talking to them. There's plenty of them at these crazy hacker conferences that we all go to. But you know, here I think we have to be very careful of anybody who claims to have that kind of long-term wisdom, because it just does not exist.
Okay, moving on. What do you guys think of the Flock camera ban on highways? Yeah, so apparently local law enforcement agencies are revoking all previously issued approvals for license plate readers and various rights of ways. There's a recent exponential increase in deployments of law enforcement cameras, as well as concerning reports of misuse, data privacy concerns, and surveillance schemes that merit immediate action to preserve citizens' sovereignty and quality of life. You guys think this is a good move?
Yes. Absolutely. I'm glad that Flock cameras are rolling back.
Yeah.
I was enjoying seeing what people were starting to plan for Halloween. And I'm seeing that people are attempting to arraign people on charges of like criminal mischief for interfering with Flock cameras, and the grand juries are refusing to indict them because no one seems to mind damage to Flock cameras to the point where people are alibiing folks. No, people are getting 15 alibis for destroying Flock cameras.
Now they don't if they're banned, they don't have to destroy them.
Exactly.
Right.
And
so can we agree as local policy, this is a good move, hands down.
I think it's a very good move.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, then move to Florida, because that's where it's happening. It's not happening here. I want it to happen here, but for some reason, Florida has come out against Flock cameras. I did not expect to see this. The governor is actually signing off on this. Wow. So if you can get a right-wing Republican state to ban something that we all hate, boy, it must really be awful. You know, it's and how do we get that here in New York?
Yeah, it is interesting to see, you know, this being one of those issues that sort of crosses party lines and right or left wing or what have you, because basically everyone, I think a good amount of people on various sides of the issue are coming to the realization that this is not a great idea. It's not working. It's being wildly abused. There are still police officers stalking their ex-girlfriends with these things. And it's also just been spotlighted so much in not just programs like ours, but like the mainstream media has picked up on this and has really gotten the word out and has, I think, helped a lot of people start thinking more critically about these things.
Whoever is furiously typing, please stop.
I think, or
mute. Go ahead.
I think one thing that is going on in New York that we could take as an example is the way that people destroy their license plates or otherwise obscure the printed side. And I think like unless these things actually get addressed, you will have like mass actions. And I think going a step further, don't destroy the good side, flip it over, turn it upside down, spray it matte black, and just have it on your car, but have everyone just with black license plates that are basically illegible, stuff like that. I think as an action on a particular day or as a way of dissenting from places that will not listen to people, are the right move, and it makes it unenforceable. Like the whole idea of a license plate is this common understanding that, well, we should have these, but if people stop agreeing to that sort of social contract because they know they'll be abused if they do present their license plate, then how do you enforce that? Are you going to arrest everybody on the road? Because I see plenty of messed up license plates. They're all over. It's a common thing in the city and in the wider state. And there are just so many more people in a big city like New York and in a populous part of the country that how do you even police that? Like the social contract breaks. I think people need to stop breaking their license plate, but just resist it completely. And those are the types of things that will maybe get some attention, but without any kind of like rational kind of hearing and social buy-in, why would we participate in the plates in general?
On the subject of police, a large number of people who do that are police.
Oh, I know.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. A lot of the reasoning behind it is not so much anti-flock sentiment, but anti-paying any kind of toll sentiment. So that's why you see a lot of damaged plates around. People do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, or like put it in your trunk. You know,
those leaf stickers.
On, it's in your car. Uh-huh. Yeah, the leaves, they got the leaf, you know, or they basically just grind off the reflective paint. All that. It's so pervasive and incredibly hard to police because you get a certain threshold of people doing it. It's just like, what are you going to do? And what really is the penalty if your license plate isn't visible? Like, okay, your license is suspended. So you're going to suspend 10,000 people's licenses? I mean, I don't even know what the penalty is, but I suspect it's not a felony. I mean, are they going to make it a felony to not have a license plate?
Well, I don't know. That's a good question.
What is the cost? Like, if the cost is less because it's a minor infraction and everyone does it, how do you pick who to...
Well, everyone doesn't do it. All right.
I would beg to differ. Damaged plates in New York.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think they're all, like, backing into trailers and stuff.
Yes. Who's got their hand up? Alex, go ahead.
Yeah, I mean, I think what... Kyle, you're driving at here, and the reasoning behind why a lot of people do this is because not only do they want to get out of paying various tolls and things that are billed by license plate readers, etc., but I think it's fundamentally about not wanting to be tracked. And with these flock cameras, I think the primary criticism here is that what we are essentially doing is turning driving or the road network into this massive, warrantless national tracking grid that is searchable by police. And then I think to bring this right back down to terms that we can all easily understand is that this is a metadata issue. You know, we leave metadata in so many places all around our lives, our digital lives, you know, we left metadata when we connected into Signal tonight to access the show. Anybody who's downloading the show will leave a bit of metadata on the 2600 website if they're downloading it through the 2600 website.
Hang on, we don't keep that data. We do not keep logs, just so you know.
You shouldn't. I'm glad you clarified that. But Apple will certainly have metadata about anybody who downloads this show as some kind of, you know, as a podcast after the live broadcast here on WBAI, which everybody should support, by the way. So the issue here is that you're turning every single journey in your car, a physical thing that you're doing in your life, if you're going to work, if you're going to the doctor's office, if you're heading to a protest, if you're heading to an abortion clinic, if you're going to a religious service, if you're going to the supermarket, right? Every single one of those events in your life is now tracked and time-stamped, mm-hmm. that you cross this invisible line at this particular date and time, and then you cross this other invisible line at this particular date and time, and you're leaving all of this metadata around from your physical life. There's something inherently wrong and disquieting about that, I think, to ordinary citizens. You don't have to be a hacker or a technologist to realize that that's wrong. And I love that we realize that Florida is right, leading the charge in this particular legislation.
Well, now, technically, it's the life of your car, because they don't know who
That's
is
true.
Driving the car at that point.
That's true.
That's why if you get That's a red true. Light camera, places that still have red light camera tickets, you don't get points because they can't prove it was actually you driving the car, but you do get the ticket. So that's a big thing there. And also, you know, how else would you run something like Easy Pass, which has been around for decades, you have to collect tolls somehow, you know, unless we're advocating not having tolls at all, which I don't know how that would work. People like to have the convenience of driving through and not having to stop and give some guy money and slow things down. So it's a question of convenience. But for those, what Alex is saying is, you know, when you just take a trip to the supermarket, it's a good chance a flock camera is going to grab your license plate there and know something more about at least your car and probably you. Go ahead, Rob.
Yeah, I mean, to go back to what Kyle was saying about the social contract of a license plate, like I'm all for people who are doing unsafe things behind the wheel of a car being found and punished for it. And when we you know, collectively came up with this social contract of the license plate generations before any of our times, it was understood that, you know, if somebody sees your car doing something it shouldn't, they can alert the authorities or whatever. But that was long before we were faced with this scenario of that data being metadata that's logged and kept without any oversight, without anyone's approval, and without basic security, as the issue with this data being abused for stalkers has already shown us. This thing is already being misused. It's already insecure. And, you know, it's provably just a bad idea to have it being run the way it's run.
Absolutely. And I think this also kind of relates back to the AI policy in the New York public schools, because everybody said, ooh, Flock, let's roll this out as much as we possibly can. And then to find out that it was not necessarily the panacea that people seemed to think it was going to be. And so I do applaud when people can see past the salesmanship and take a moment to think about what the potential repercussions of a massive system rollout might be, to take a moment and think about it before then having to hastily try to refold the map, as it were.
And, you know, Ring doorbells, you know, recording everything going on in front of your door sounds like a good idea at first, but then when you realize the cops are tapping into it and spying on everybody, not such a good idea. Alex.
Yeah. You know, in terms of other states adopting this as well, I think it actually could be somewhat simplistic as well, because this comes down to a state's rights issue. This is not a federal issue here. The state owns or controls the highway right of way. And any of these automated license plate reader systems that are placed on highways, they have to be given permits. So any governor could then direct the state transportation agency, whether it's the DOT in Florida, Department of Transportation, or I presume same thing here in New York. I actually don't even really know what the state agency is, but whatever it is, the governor could direct that there be some kind of study into the permits that have been issued already, and could revoke permits for any kind of automated license plate reader, or give some kind of ban or moratorium, or rather institute some kind of ban or moratorium on those particular permits being issued. So I see this as politically really simple for any other state to accomplish, similarly to how Florida's done so.
Well, it's rare that we look at Florida as an example of something good, but in this particular case, I think there's no denying it.
Yeah, it is not.
Stop clocks.
Yeah, exactly. Our right every now and then. And I just think it, as you both pointed out, Rob and Alex and Gila, all of us are realizing, wow, maybe this thing that we might have grizzled at, that, oh, wow, they don't want their license plate seen as, maybe it's more a recognition of the operating conditions than we ever thought. I didn't realize I might be coming to that at the end of a conversation here, but it truly is. I mean, if the car isn't using telemetry, or your phone, or something fixed on the side of the road, I mean, they're really, it is an antiquated thing, as Rob pointed out, of like yesteryear. And it honestly is kind of quaint when you really add up the amount of systems tracking you.
We're going to have to leave it there. I wish we had more time. We have so many other stories to talk about as well, but the hour goes by so quickly and we have so much to say. Rob, I believe you have an announcement this week for people listening.
Yes, indeed. This Friday, 2600 meetings are happening all over the world. Go to 2600.com/meetings to find one near you or start one near you. Here in New York, it's at the Citigroup Building, 53rd and Lexington, this Friday evening.
Where it has been since 1987, so it's definitely fun to stop by and say hi to all the hackers. But we are out of time now. You can write to us, oth@2600.com. No overtime this week, but next week, hopefully. And next week, of course, on WBAI at 7 p.m. And stay tuned to WBAI and give to WBAI.org. Good night, everyone.
Oh, you've been on a fast train, and it's going off the rail. And you can't come back, can't come back again. And you start breaking down in the pouring rain. Oh, you've been on the fast train. sad, and you're going on a journey way into the land, and you start breaking down, 'cause you're under strain, and you're jumping on, yes, you're jumping on a fast train, jumping on a fast train, gotta go on the lam, stuck in no man. And you start breaking down, and you're going to the sound, but you hear that fast train. Sound of the wheels. Oh, deep down in your heart, do you really know how you feel? Then you start breaking down, going to the pain. Keep on moving on a fast train, moving on a fast train. Well, we over the land. Next thing you're out of your mind, and you're out of your depth, and through the window she crept. Oh, there's nowhere to go in the sleet and snow. Just keep on moving, ooh, on a fast train, moving on a fast train. You got to go.
Going nowhere.